Today we want to talk about wishes and dreams. Wishes and dreams that can come true. I love that theme in Disney. You know, it comes all the time in Disney songs, Disney movies, right? Here's what we have from Cinderella. A dream is a wish your heart makes. I love that. You know, we Christianized that song once upon a time, and I sing it to myself all the time. We say, a prayer is a wish your heart makes. Sleeping Beauty says, I know you, I walk with you once upon a dream. I know you, the gleam in your eye is so familiar a gleam, and I know it's true that visions are seldom all they seem. But I know you'll walk with me as in the dream. All our dreams can come true, says Walt Disney, if we have the courage to pursue them. And he also said, if you can dream it, you can do it. But of course, Peter Pan is tops because he talks about Neverland. There's a Neverland waiting for you where all your happy dreams come true. Every dream that you dream will come true. I can fly, I can fly, I can fly. That's Disney. And of course, all of that is capturing something that's deep down in all of us. We know that there is a big optimism in children like Peter Pan. They just think everything's going to be great. And then when you get to be our age, something happens, right? We've been a little dinged up by life. We have a hard time thinking that the things that we deeply wish for can really happen. But today, I'm going to tell you that they can happen, and they do happen, and they shall happen if you have the right dream and the right God. Matthew 20, verse 20. We are toggling back and forth between Matthew 20, Mark 10, because they're the same, but sometimes little nuances in the story come through. So let me tell you what we're talking about in our text today. This is what we sometimes call James and John's ambitious request. So then James and John, sons of Zebedee, and their mother, Salome, mother of Zebedee's sons, come to Jesus with her sons, and they come, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to them and to her, oh, what do you wish? See, we're talking about wishes. What do you wish? What a great question. What do you wish? And she said, and they said, grant that these two sons of mine, or us, may sit one on your right hand, one on the left in your kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, you do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am about to be baptized with? And they said, we are able. And so he said to them, you will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and left hand is not mine to give, but for those that my Father decides are worthy of it. And then he starts talking about servitude, being the servant of all. All right, so when we're talking about drinking the cup and being baptized with the baptism, you know that the word baptism is basically the same as immersion, right? It is the same, essentially, as a term we use when we say we're in over our heads or we are overwhelmed. Whelm is a flood. Overwhelmed, you're flooded over. So if you say, I am overwhelmed, you're kind of close to what Jesus is saying here. Are you able to endure the immersion? Are you able to drink the cup? And they say, yes, we're prepared to do that. A really, really big time in John's life. This is a series on the life and teachings of John. This was a huge moment in John's life. And we have some things to say about this that are both bad and good, but mostly good. What we're going to see is that John and his brother James, sons of Salome, they want to sit with Jesus, very near Jesus in his kingdom glory. They want to be near him. They want to be his right-hand men. They want to do everything just right and be just right in the kingdom. That's what they want. The problem is there's some bad timing here, which I'll discuss in just a moment. And they are really showing a regretful disregard for the feelings of Jesus, which I'll talk about in just a moment. And also that there is a component of ego here that is bad. And we're sorry for that. We'll say more about that in just a little bit. But they've been disregarding the feelings of Jesus and disregarding the feelings of their fellow disciples when they say, let us be first in your kingdom. Never mind all these other fellows. That's not wonderful. But they have a good perspective on the real meaning of life. And I don't want you to be so overwhelmed by the bad in this interview that you forget the good that's in this interview, because this is really tops in so many ways. Again, to go back to our story, we're talking about timing here being very, very poor. What awful timing. So Jesus is, in this context, giving the disciples some really, really bad news. And I want you to see the abrupt change of subject that Salome and James and John introduce to this story. So here's what it sounds like in context. Jesus says, we're going to go to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man, I, am going to be betrayed by the chief priests and scribes, and they're going to condemn me to death. And they will deliver me to the Gentiles to mock, to be scourged, and to crucify him. And the third day he'll rise again. Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, saying, we want a certain thing. I want you to see how abrupt that is. Jesus says, I am going to go through a horrible thing for me. A horrible thing for me. And then the subject changes, like, instantly. Lord, we want to talk to you about something. The same thing, of course, is in Mark. You see what I've underlined. Jesus says, I'm going to be condemned to death. They're going to mock me. They're going to whip me, scourge me. They're going to spit on me. They're going to kill me. And then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come unto Jesus saying, Master, we wish you'd do this for us, whatever we ask. That is such a disregard for the feelings of Jesus. That is such an abrupt change of subject. It's very, very bad timing. Poor James and John. It's all like saying, Jesus is saying, I am embracing. And by the way, you know where you are in the Gospels right now? When you get to, this is Mark 10 and Matthew 20. So Mark 10, we're at the end of Mark chapter 10. And as soon as we lean over into Mark 11, that's the triumphal entry. I mean, we're in the last week of Jesus' life. Same thing in Matthew 20. We're at the end of Matthew 20 talking about this. And as soon as we go to Matthew 21, we're in the triumphal entry, the last week of Jesus' life. So Jesus is saying, I am going to go in about a week through the most horrific thing I can imagine. I'm going to be beaten and disrespected and killed. This is going to be earth-shaking. For you, for me, this is the biggest trauma that you could ever imagine. It's the biggest trauma that I can imagine. And it's as if James and John and their mother Salome say, well, I'm sure that's all very interesting, Lord, but can we talk to you about something really important? Like, what? How could you have such a total disregard for Jesus' feelings? We've said on several occasions that there are only 9 times in the Synoptic Gospels when the feelings and words of John are recorded for us, the exact words, only about 9 times. 3 of these times are more detailed than others, and in all 3 of those, these are not very flattering words for John. We had the instance when John said, we saw somebody casting out demons in your name, and we forbade them. And Jesus said, don't ever do that again. You are not the owner of the Jesus franchise. You don't get to run around saying, you stop it. You don't follow with us, so you stop it. You are not the boss. Do not do that ever again. Not so long before this story, they're traveling back to Jerusalem. And eventually, Jesus will be crucified in Jerusalem, you know, just outside city limits. And so they're making their trip back that way, and they're going to go through Samaria, and the Jews and the Samaritans do not love each other. And so the Samaritans tell Jesus, you can't come here and stay overnight in Samaria. And so James and John ask Jesus, do you want us to call down fire from heaven just to destroy, wipe all these people out? And Jesus said, you don't even know what manner of spirit you are of. Do you know who gives you those ideas? The devil gives you those ideas. And your own egotism gives you those ideas. I didn't come here to wipe out the Samaritans. I came here to save people. You don't even know what kind of a spirit is making you blurt these things out. So you have the instance, Lord, we forbade him. And Jesus said, don't ever do that again, essentially. Lord, should we call down fire? He said, you sound like the devil. Don't say things like that. And then on this occasion, Lord, can we talk to you about something really important? Not that Calvary stuff. Like, poor John, you know? These are the three biggest interviews we have with John, significant interviews. And in all those cases, it's not very flattering. Well, so that's the situation. This is really, really bad timing, and we're sorry for that. So we just want to establish that. At our best, we Christians are not great. We also see that there's a complete disregard for the feelings of the disciples. Not only is this bad timing, this is kind of saturated with egotism. And I'm sorry to say that most of what we do as Christians, all of us, is sort of saturated, at least tainted, corrupted by egotism. And that's coming through here. And we're really sorry for this. This is such a shame. Later on in John's life and James's life, they're going to regret parts of what's taking place here. They're going to regret disregarding the feelings of Jesus. I know that that's true. That's the way I would feel about it. And later in their lives, they would come to regret disregarding the feelings of the other disciples. Because in the interview we have in the Mark 10 text, he said to them, "What do you wish? Grant us that we may sit on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory. Let us do that, Lord." And Jesus says, "You don't know what you're asking." And then he says, "Are you sure you're able to do this?" And they say, "We're sure." And even that we are sure, we have to be really careful with such a bold assertion. Oh, yes, yes, yes. We can handle anything life can throw at us. Well, this has some egotism that's not good. This is self-promotion. Lord, we see, like, you have a little band of disciples here, which is great. But out of all these disciples, we would like to be one and two. Rank us first and second. And we don't know which one thought they were going to be on the right hand, because the right hand man is clearly first, right? And left hand man is second. And I don't know if they've worked that out, but it doesn't matter. They want to be first and second. And that shows a disregard for the feelings of the other disciples, especially perhaps Peter. You know, they weren't entirely wrong in their assessment of what's going on, right? Because the three big disciples, clearly in the Gospels, the three big disciples are Peter, James, and John. So they're not, like, way off in their assessment of who should be first and second in Jesus' kingdom glory. But what about poor Peter? So Peter is definitely in the top one or two. Because on the one hand, Jesus gave Peter keys to the kingdom. So obviously, Peter is really, really important. The only reason we don't know whether he's one or two is because John is called the disciple that Jesus loved. When it came time for Jesus to commit the care of his mother to one of his disciples when Jesus died on the cross, Jesus decided to give her care to John. So John is definitely right up there. So is Peter number one and John is number two? Or is John number one and Peter's number two? Don't know. But definitely James is not number two. But they're not bad because James is number three. So it's not like they're totally off the wall to say, "Lord, we want to be one and two," when this whole thing is settled. They're close. But what about the disregard for the feelings of the others who are listening to this? And of course, they would realize that this could hurt people's feelings. If there is any question about that, it would be settled here in the text. Mark 10:41 says, "And when the ten heard that, they began to be much displeased." Like, are you stark raving mad? We could have all gone up to Jesus and say, me, I want to be teacher's pet. But you, in your boldness, especially poor Peter, how dare you say, "Can we be one and two? What are we, chop liver?" And so there is a real disregard for the feelings of others here. And I suspect that later in their lives, John and James were very sorry for disregarding the feelings of their fellow disciples. But that's not the way it is in the moment. And I'm sure they're very sorry about that. Of course, Later in their Christian lives, they would have been very careful to realize that it's very presumptuous to think that Jesus could never have people more worthy than they to sit on his right hand and on his left. I'm sure later they thought about this. I'm sure as they grew in the Lord, they would have remembered their past failures. And all of us have past failures, which are substantial. But they weren't thinking of that right now. And I'm sure later in their Christian lives, they would remember how awful they could be. And they would also look forward to times when temptations might come that would knock them out off balance. Poor James and John, in a very short time, would be in real trouble because they would watch the arrest and crucifixion of Jesus with horror, and they fled with the rest of them, and so they didn't exactly show themselves to be bulletproof in their followership of Jesus, right? And we know that as time went by, they would have regretted all of this because they really weren't being very loving. They weren't considering the opinions and feelings of the people around them. The problem with self-promotion is that it's the antithesis of love. So in 1 Corinthians 13:5, we're taught love seeks not her own. And yet James and John are clearly seeking their own best interests here. Philippians 2:3, let each of you regard other better than themselves. So as James and John got older and more mature in the Lord, they would have said, Lord, why don't you let somebody else sit on your right hand and on your left? But that was not this day. Romans 12:10, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring the other person, to give preferential treatment to the others. Like James should have said, well, Lord, I certainly think that Peter deserves to be on your right hand or your left before me, and I won't presume to be in that position. And really, John should have said that as well. That's what it means to prefer others, right? Philippians 2:20, a description of Timothy, that outstanding Christian gentleman. And Paul says, I have nobody like Timothy. I have nobody like-minded who will naturally care for your state. Timothy just naturally cares about other people. So he wouldn't come up and say, Lord, let me sit on your left hand or let me sit on your right hand. He would say, Lord, take care of the others. I want to stand guard over the others. Take care of them. And he naturally cares for their best interests. Romans 15:2, when you've walked with the Lord for a little while, you realize that your job is to stand guard over people, not exploit them. Romans 15:2, let every one of us please his neighbor for his good, to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself. The idea is not, you know, that I get first or second place and let the others fall in wherever they may. The idea is, Lord, take care of these people. That's what I want. Even Christ, please not himself. And so these are the problems in this interview, this whole thing with John, and we're sorry that it happened and all of that. But having said that, and I think we've established that now, right? Having said that, this is one of the most wonderful, remarkable interviews that any person has ever had with the Lord Jesus, and it really is something that I want you to love and take home. In Mark 10:36, we come to the crux of the issue, and Jesus here asked the disciples and Salome, the mother of the disciples, because if you're a parent, you should totally understand this. What do you wish? What do you wish? What a great question. What if today, right now, at 10 till 12, Jesus is asking you in your heart of hearts, I mean, really, really, what are you saying? What do you wish? Disney says, a dream is a wish your heart makes. What do you wish? What do you want? What a huge question. Lord, are you asking me what I want? Because I have an answer for that. What do you wish? Matthew 20:26 doesn't show Jesus rebuking these disciples. You think, those rascals, what terrible timing, disregard for the feelings of Jesus, who just now told you that he's going to die, he's going to suffer, and you completely disregard that, and you want to talk about yourselves, how awful. And what about total disregard for all these other disciples, how awful. You think Jesus is going to slap them down and he doesn't. He says, what do you wish? And he doesn't rebuke them. He refuses their request, but his refusal is not very harsh, is it? It's like, well, only the Father can decide who sits on my left hand and who sits on my right hand. I can't decide that. And so we're not going to decide that today. But he didn't exactly slap them down. It was a refusal, but more along the lines of a no for now. The answer is no for now. Let us see. No for now. But that's not exactly a rebuke. It's not exactly a slap down, is it? It's really not so bad. So interestingly, Jesus does not scold them. And instead he says, speaking about servitude. Oh, and here's the context, right? So the 10 are indignant. Like, no, you know, James and John, where do you get off presenting this request? It was not your place to do that. And what about us? It says the 10 were indignant. So on that occasion, Jesus begins again to talk about what it means to be the servant of all. And he says, you know that in the world, great people, important people exploit others. But we don't do that. In my kingdom, if you want to be great, you have to behave differently. And this is what Jesus was teaching them. And you think, well, this teaching in itself is a rebuke to the disciples, James and John. But really, it's a rebuke to all disciples everywhere, to all the 10 who are angry, plus to James and John who made the ambitious request. It's sort of a correction for everybody. He says, it shall not be so among you. In the world, you know, the Gentiles, the Caesars, the generals, the masters, the employers, the businessmen, they all rule over their people. They take what they can because they can. But that's not what we do. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. And Mark 10:44 says, slave of all. So he's giving this wonderful illustration, teaching on being a servant in the context of these fellows fighting about who should be first. So all of that, you say, well, this is a rebuke on John and James for their ambitious request. But this rebuke is closer in context to the indignation, the displeasure that the disciples felt when they heard James and John's request. So don't get too locked down on displeasure. The truth is, Jesus did not scold them for their wish. And instead he said, if you did wish that, this is how you do it. If you desire to be great, I'm not faulting you for that. If you desire to be great in my kingdom, let me tell you how to do that. You have to be the servant. And if perchance you wanted to be the greatest in my kingdom, then you'll be the servant of all. So he didn't slap them down. He said, now, if you want to do this, here's how it's done. And he apparently approved in general of what they were looking for. The most amazing thing here is that Jesus immediately asks them, he says it this way, you don't know what you're asking. When you say you want to be first and second ranking in my kingdom, you don't really understand what you're asking, do you? This is going to be hard. So he immediately says, can you drink the cup that I drink of? He says, can you be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they say, we can. Well, they don't understand what they're saying. You know, they're babes in the woods. They're innocents. They're going to get devoured by the wolves. They have no idea what they're talking about. But they have some idea of what they're talking about. And Jesus, again, is not rebuking them. He says, can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink? He said, sure, we'll do that. And they'd seen some of this already, right? Because they were with Jesus in the early days when he went to his hometown and he preached to them and they led him to the brow of the hill in Nazareth and they were going to cast him off and kill him. So they know that things can go badly in the service of their master. They have seen Jesus almost stoned to death because people were mad at him. So when he says, can you do this? Can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink? Are you ready to experience what I experienced to go through it with me? Are you going to suffer with me? They say, okay. So the baptism that I am going to undergo, I'm going to be immersed in a lot of trouble. I just told you, I'm going to be mocked, spit upon, killed. So can you be immersed in my trouble? Will you be overwhelmed? Are you willing to get in over your head? Because we're talking about a war here. And a war cannot be done with half measures. So are you prepared to do that? And they say, yes, we're prepared to do that. Now, James and John are no brownie Girl Scouts here. They're pretty tough. And they say, yes, we'll do that. And Jesus does not slap them down. He doesn't rebuke them for this. He says, no for now. The answer is no for now. But he is not terribly hard on him. And so once again, if Jesus is asking you, what do you wish for? The smartest thing you could ever say is, I wish to be truly great when all the dust settles. In your kingdom, when things are as they should be, I would like to be counted among the truly great. And then Jesus says, well, are you prepared to drink that cup? Are you prepared to be immersed with the immersion? Are you prepared for that? And hopefully your answer is yes. But once again, these are not half measures. This is a walk and this is a war. Jesus just said, I'm going to die, you know. Are you ready to drink that cup with me? Yeah, we'll do that. This is a walk and this is a war. So you have to understand, are you willing to do what it takes? And the answer has to be answered individually in every single person's heart. So what does it look like? It looks like a walk. It looks like a war. A walk, for example, are you willing to drink the cup of actually spending time with me every day to read my word and see what it even says? To talk to me about how this relates in your life? Would you even do that? Would you drink that cup? Would you be baptized in that immersion? Do you want to go there with me? What about things like your money? Are you willing to slide your credit card, your checkbook across the table to me and say, okay, Lord, well, let's just do this the way you want to do it. You want to drink that cup? Do you want to be in that immersion? I mean, because you're going to be in over your head. You're going to shove your bank account to me and say, all right, Lord, well, let's just have you do with that whatever you want. You do that? You want to drink that cup? Because that's what it takes to get the wish. So you want to do that? What if we're talking about going on your phone or your tablet or your computer and looking at bad pictures? You're going to shove that across the table and say, okay, Lord, well, from now on, you know, this is your device here, and I want to look at the things I'm supposed to look at. It says, you do? You want to drink this cup with me? Because if you want your wish to come to pass, this is how we're going to do it. It's going to be an immersion. You're going to be in over your head. What about if we're talking about how you're going to arrange your marriage? You're going to treat your spouse in an Ephesians 5 kind of a way, where you love her as much as you love yourself. You're going to treat her in an Ephesians 5 kind of a way, even if she's not very lovely in body and spirit. You going to drink that cup with me? You going to undergo that immersion? Because you're going to be in over your head. You know, I'm not fooling around with this. Are you? James and John said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do anything you want us to do. You going to stand up for me and tell people you're a Christian, even if they think you're weird? I'll drink that cup. I'll undergo that immersion. That's kind of overwhelming sometimes, but I'll do that. And so that's the way it was. And, you know, they just said, yes, we can. You know what I love about that? Where's the hesitation? Where's the regret? Yes. And you know those rascals really did it. Jesus told them that they would do it, which is so great. Because you would think the way he asked the question, no, you're not. You know you can't do this. That's not what he says. He says, you shall indeed drink the cup that I drink, and you're going to undergo the immersion. And they sure enough did it. That's what I love about this. What do you wish? Well, we just wish that when all the dust settles and everything is right in the world, we just wish that we had the best of everything from God. Best for best, right? Last week. We want to be in the most romantic position with you, Lord. When there are heavenly adventures, because we know there are going to be heavenly adventures. You know, people who get to do special things with you at special times, field trips, adventures, traveling. And when that happens, and there are certain people who are nearer to you than others, we want to be there. That's what you wish. That's what I wish. And you'll drink the cup? Yes, I will. You'll undergo the immersion? Yes, I will. No hesitation, no regrets? Nope, we will. And he says, you're right. I happen to know that you will. So you're thinking, well, nobody can do that. That's never going to work. You will not. But while they had some glitches, look what happened. So John the Apostle, he's arrested. Well, let's start earlier than that. First, they're on the road with Jesus a lot, right? Which is not convenient. The foxes have holes, but you don't have a place to lay your head because you're on the road. And then they watch Jesus arrested and crucified. That's like post-traumatic stress syndrome. They watch that. So you're going to drink that cup? Yes. You're going to undergo that immersion? You'll be in over your head. Yes. The opening of Acts chapter 4, the man is healed by the temple courtyard. And then John is thrown in prison, arrested and thrown in prison for blasphemy. You're going to drink that cup? Yes. And he sure did. Chapter 5, John and James both are arrested and thrown in prison. You're going to drink that cup? They said yes. And Jesus said, you're right, actually, you will drink that cup. Chapter 12 of Acts, James becomes the first Christian martyr, the first of the disciples executed for his faith. You're going to drink the cup? James says, yes. You're going to undergo the immersion? You'll be in over your head. You will? Yes. And he sure did. John was exiled to Patmos for the testimony of Jesus Christ in the book of Revelation. He was kicked out of his own church by Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence. He was disrespected in so many ways all of his life. You're going to drink that cup? Yes, I will. Hesitation? No. Regret? No. Because it's my wish. A dream is a wish your heart makes. I'll do it. But actually, that's true. You will do it. And you can do it. Many years ago, Hudson Taylor was talking to F.B. Meyer, two of my heroes. F.B. Meyer says, Hudson Taylor once told me that he felt like the Lord appeared to him and asked him a question. He said, my child, I'm going to evangelize China. And if you'd like to go with me, I'll do it through you. And Hudson Taylor said, I'll do that. The Lord is going to do something. And he says, and if you like to go with me, I'll do it through you. And that's ever the way it is. It's as if the Lord is saying to me, to you, right now, are you going to drink this cup? You're going to undergo the immersion because you're going to be in way over your head. Are you ready to do that? Is that what you wish? Is that your dream? Have you come to the persuasion that the best thing that could ever happen in the whole wide world to a person like you is that when all of this is settled and Jesus is in his glory, you're going to be near him, like this close to him, on his right hand, on his left, or if that's too bold, just as near as you were made to be. And that's the happiest conclusion to your life that you could ever imagine. Have you come to be persuaded of that? Because if that's your wish, then the next question is, are you going to drink the cup? Are you going to undergo the immersion? Even if you know in your heart of hearts, this overwhelms me, are you going to do it? And if the answer is yes, then the Lord is going to say to you, actually, I know that you can because I'll make you able. That's what we call the victorious Christian life. There's no temptation taking you, but such as is common to man. God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape. So you say go, and it's a go. What do you say? And the Lord is constantly asking, my child, I'm going to do something with you. Do you want it? Yes. Will you drink the cup? Yes. All right, then it's a go. It's as if God might be saying things like this to people like us. My child, I'm going to show the world that I can take the curse out of cancer. And if you like to walk with me, I'll do it through you. You take the cup? Yes. You'll undergo the immersion? Yes. And Jesus could say, with a faith like that, with a wish, a dream like that, indeed, you will drink the cup. You can do it. As if God might say, my child, I'm going to show the world that I can make a person happy even without money. You complain because you don't have any money. My child, I'm going to take your money away. I'm going to show the world that you can be happy without money. And if you like to walk with me, I'll do it through you. You want to drink that cup? Nope, I want money. All right, well, that's on you. You say, yeah, I'll do that. I'm going to show the whole world that you'd be happy without money. Then, okay, I'll use you to do it. But you have to drink the cup. Johnny Erickson Tata talked one time about how this feels for her. And she says, whenever I try to explain how I arrived at this point, because, you know, she's been walking with the Lord for all these years, confined to a wheelchair, can't really move her hands significantly. And she's been wonderful. What a great story her life has been. And she says, whenever I try to explain how I arrived at this point, I shake my head in amazement. Has everything to do with God and His grace that sustains, not just over the long haul, but grace is given in tiny moments, like stepping stones leading you from one tick of the clock to the next. I love that. It's a walk and it's a war. Stepping stones, the ticking of a clock. You'll drink the cup now, today. Yes, I will. All right, well, that's today. Tomorrow? Yep, I'll drink the cup tomorrow. I'll undergo the immersion. Today, tomorrow. One tick of the clock at a time. That's the victorious Christian life. You can do that. D.L. Moody told a story about the man who was a clerk at the agricultural warehouse, and his boss got a shipment of beans that had been damaged by moisture, and they had good beans and bad beans, and they put them all in the barrel, so the bad beans were at the bottom of the barrel, the good beans on top. Then the wholesale buyers came, and they're talking to the clerk, and the barrel is marked that these are A1 quality beans, and the buyer tells the Christian clerk, I see the beans that you've shown me. This price is cheaper than anybody else. Are you telling me that the beans I have not seen are the same quality as the beans you've showed me? And this clerk was told, you tell them they're all the same quality. All the barrels are the same. Bottom of the barrel, same as the top of the barrel. And the clerk is a Christian. He says, no, sir. Some of the beans have been damaged by moisture. And the buyer says, thank you for telling me. I think I'm going to get my beans elsewhere. So the clerk's boss, who is not a believer, comes and says, why did you tell the man that? We've lost the sale. And the clerk says, I'm a Christian. I had to tell the truth. The boss says, that's fine, but now you've lost your job. Jesus says, I want to show the whole world that I can make a person happy without money. My child, and if you like to walk with me, I'll use you to do it. Will you? Yes. No hesitation? No. No regret? No. All right then. My child, I'm going to show the world that walking with me in life can make up for a person's loneliness. And if you like to walk with me, I'll show the world through you. But you have to drink the cup. You'll do that? I don't like being lonely. But yes, I'll drink that cup. you'll be immersed over your head. Okay, I'll do that. You will? I will. Becky Tirabassi talks about what it was like when she left her party life. She became a Christian. She was an alcoholic, and she knew she couldn't go drinking anymore. She told her friends. At first, she did go out drinking with them. And the first time she did that was okay. The second time she did that, she thought, well, I'll just have a glass of wine with dinner. And the next thing you know, it all snowballed. And her mother was always skeptical of her faith, like, you haven't really changed, Becky. And she said, yes, I have changed. I'll show you. And then she went and she got drunk with the same old friends just like before. And her mother said, Becky, you're an alcoholic. You can't even have one drink. And she was so mad at her mom. And she started praying, Lord, help me to get along with her. She's just impossible. She's just so unforgiving. And then she got kind of mad at God and said, why is it that after I became a Christian and everything, you didn't help me, and I still look like a fool drinking, and why didn't you help me, and why didn't you give me the strength? And then this thought came to her mind. The Lord did give her strength to walk away from her addiction, but only if she didn't drink. And once she had one drink, then the strength was gone. And so she realized that she could never drink again. And she told her friends that, the friends that she'd always partied with. And she was supposed to go out with them on a particular night, and her friend Penny was supposed to pick her up, and they were all going to go out, and they were going to go to a restaurant, and there would be drinking there, but she wouldn't drink. And it was time for Penny to come and get her, and Penny didn't come. So Becky called Penny's home. Dad picks up the phone. And is Becky there? Dad says, no, she's not here. I don't expect her to be back till late. And Becky said, the moment that the line went dead, she knew that friends had decided not to take her anymore. And she knew that this was the start of a new life. And she said, I wanted a new life, but these friends were dear to me. I loved them. And they didn't pick me up. And so, on that occasion, she had to decide, do I drink the cup? This is overwhelming. Do I undergo the immersion? So Jesus might be asking you, what do you wish? What do you really want in life? A dream is a wish your heart makes. All right, Lord, what I really want in life, what I am persuaded would be the greatest happiness I could ever experience, is if I came to the end of my life and I was counted among those who were nearest and dearest to you. That would be the most romantic, the most adventurous thing that I could ever imagine. So you ask me, Lord, what do I wish? That's what I wish. And the Lord then would have a follow-up question for you. Can you drink the cup? Can you endure the immersion? And you should answer without regret and without hesitation, yes, I can. And then the Lord is going to say, actually, that's true, because I give you the strength to do that, if that's what you want.